Phil Putnam, a dynamic leader who helps organizations unlock top performance. Did you used to be crap at sales?
Oh, yes. The way that I look at it is that in some ways, I still am. There is no done. There's no finished growing, especially when it comes to sales. I'm the first person to put out a book that really looks at leadership in this specific way. Very typical situation for a first-time leader. I was brought into a global role with a very large mandate in a very short period of time to deliver results and very limited resources. I'm going to have to get my team members to give me what I want, which is quality work on time on a very regular basis in order for me to deliver my team's number to my larger business. The majority of senior leadership, the ones who really dictate, are from the baby boomer and older level of Gen X. The majority of the workforce is millennials and Gen Zers. So there's a big difference there. And I run into a lot of senior leaders that basically say, yeah, I get it, but I don't want to. You literally cannot succeed without human employees. This is not a problem that AI has solved. There's no such thing as a global enterprise, entirely automated, machine-driven business. It's one of the most important phrases any leader who's not in those two generations can hear. Millennials and Gen Zers value their time more than they fear change. So the attitude that a lot of senior leaders have right now towards job candidates and hiring is that, well, I can afford to lose people because there's so many people looking for work. And people are so scared of not having a job right now that they'll stick it out, even when I'm not giving them what they truly need. That is not an accurate statement for millennials and Gen Zers.
How should a leader that might have millennials and Gen Z change their approach to motivation?
That's where the conversation really gets interesting. I arrive at a point where I ask the audience two questions. I ask them, raise your hand if and only if you truly love your employer more than you love yourself. And I ask them, raise your hand if and only if you truly care more about your company meeting its goals than you do about yourself and your loved ones getting the life that you want. Now, I have asked this question now to well over 3,000 people. How many people do you think have raised their hands yes to either of those questions?
Go on, tell us. Hello and welcome to another episode of the I Used To Be Crap At Sales podcast. I'm your host, Mark Akers, and today I'm thrilled to be joined by Phil Putnam, a dynamic leader who helps organizations unlock top performance and align their teams with the ultimate goals. Phil is a speaker, a workshop leader, a coach, and now an author of Desired-Based Leadership. Phil has a rich career history ranging from a VP to sales enablement to coaching executives. Phil is based in New York City, which you will probably hear elements of that in the podcast because I'm already hearing taxis go past. Phil's got really innovative approaches and methods to reshape how leaders should think about motivation and the results that it can bring. Phil, welcome to the I Used To Be Crap At Sales podcast. How are you and how is New York City this morning?
Well, thank you for having me. I'm wonderful. I'm super happy to be here. New York is cold this morning and windy, but there is that kind of bleak beauty to it. I'm lucky enough to have a beautiful view of one of the rivers in Manhattan outside of my window. So I get to kind of see that.
Beautiful stuff. Well, Phil, we called the podcast I Used To Be Crap At Sales because all of our guests say the same thing, and it's true for me as well. But my opening question to you is, Phil, did you used to be crap at sales?
Oh, yes. And the way that I look at it is that in some ways, I still am, because there is no done. Like, there's no finished growing, especially when it comes to sales. So I sit here today still crap at sales, at some things. And I delight in that. I've never been the person that needed to deny the reality of learning and of growth. I think that's part of why I've made a big chunk of my career sales and learning when in focus and enablement. So I sort of delight in being in process until the day we die.
And that's a great answer, right? It's like that growth mindset. I suppose when people answer the question of, yes, I used to be crap at sales, there's normally a moment that comes flooding back, that moment of realization. What was that for you? What was the moment when perhaps you were in sales and you realized you were crap? What happened?
It's actually my second sales job. My first sales job, I worked at a fast food restaurant, like a hamburger restaurant, like another version of McDonald's in the US. And that was in California where I grew up. I grew up in Sacramento, California. Then I graduated to retail clothing sales when I was in my last year of high school. school, and it was at Old Navy. Just think of like the H&M of the 90s, but far less stylish. And so I was interviewing for this job just to be a regular sales associate. And so one of the parts of the interview, the manager said, go around, pick out an item of clothing that you think I might be interested in, and then sell it to me. So the first thing I remember is that this was a female manager who was interviewing me, and I go and I picked a men's shirt that was not the right size for her. So right off the bat, no knowledge of the client's needs, no sense of, you know, a fit, customer and product fit. And then I remember that I just basically described to her like the color, and I'm like, I've tried to sell to her based upon the product itself. I didn't ask her anything about what she was looking for, what she needed, what she was trying to accomplish. And I'll never forget. It takes about 30 seconds for me to just like flame out hard, just crash and burn so hard in this interview. And she, after I'm done, she just chuckles and she's like, wow, that was really awful. And so I was like, oh crap. Because I was 17, I wanted this job. And she's like, look, like the best thing you can do before you decide what to try to sell somebody is ask them, is there anything specific that you're looking for? That one moment of sales education was probably the most profound early piece of sales education I ever received, is when she said, just start by asking me if there's anything I'm looking for.
Feels like that was very much the sell me this pen version in a clothing store.
One thing that's great about Old Navy, they're part of Gap Incorporated. So they own Gap, Old Navy, and Banana Republic. Their sales acronym for their floor associates at the time was BASIC, A-S-I-C-S. I also like that the word itself made me like go back to basics, you know, begin with a greeting, ask what they're looking for, suggest a product, inform them about the product, continue to sell by adding on. I'm 45 years old now. I worked there when I was 17, and still, that's the power of an acronym. Yeah, that was their, BASIC was their acronym.
Let's talk about just if we scanned your career from then up until we sit down now, everyone's got a howler, a big mistake that they've made that's cost them a deal, something that the audience listening to are going to laugh about, they're going to resonate with. What would you say is like one of your big mistakes that you look back on in your sales career?
Okay, so this is a mistake I made earlier in my career. And then just 2 days ago, I didn't make this mistake. This is a success story. Several years ago, I was in a sales conversation. We had achieved product market fit. We'd achieved, you know, business value fit. And so the obvious question the buyer has of, great, and how has this helped other customers before? Can you provide me with some data points? I just said, no. Because to my knowledge at the time, this product was new to the market. And I, as far as I knew, my company didn't have any data they could pull from. So I just said, no, we can't provide you with any data of how this has helped other customers. And of course, you know, I lost the deal. The follow-up is that just 2 days ago, exact same thing. And this is now I'm running my own business. I'm selling my own products. And I'm with this decision maker in an in-person meeting. And she says, and can you provide us some data on how this has helped other customers? In my head, I said, no. What came out of my mouth was, let me put something together for you. Because what I realized in that moment is the real thing that I needed was time. Like, that's the first problem that I had to solve, was get more time to find a way to give this customer what they're asking for. Because maybe there is data, maybe I don't know yet, but I probably can solve this problem if I just create time for me to do it. And so then I was able to go home and figure out, how am I going to solve this problem?
Like you said, I think it's that ability to, you hear a question and it's not that knee-jerk reaction, assuming you've got the answer. It's, let me get some time. Did you do any clarity around what it is they were looking for? Like when someone says to me, have you got any data? That could mean lots of things.
Yeah. So we'd already done that earlier in the conversation. This product that I was selling them is relatively new to the market. So I have a limited number of customers that are currently using it. And the first one started using it only 4 months ago. I knew the data was going to be limited, but also I know the problems that this product solves. I'd already made sure that this prospect I was talking to needed those problems to be solved in their business. So we'd already zeroed in on a specific KPI that they were looking for, which was basically time and stage. They didn't specify the stage they wanted, but they just said, we're really looking to address our deal velocity challenges specifically through time and stage.
So that's why that stat then was really helpful to you. Because I think that was the bit that I was just slightly missing, is that the data they were looking for? So Phil, how we got to know each other is Sarah Brazier introduced us. She said you'd be a great guest and we started speaking. You shared initially a couple of chapters of your book. I've then since had the full copy, which I'm really appreciative of. I've done some reading. The book is called Desire-Based Leadership and it came out, it was October, wasn't it, that you launched it? Let's talk about that book. First of all, who is this book for and how would you describe it?
First and foremost, it's for leaders of people. So managers. And this could be a manager of any level. It's especially poignant for middle managers, like frontline managers and second line team managers, because they often get squeezed the most on the expectations from above, the needs from below, and limited resources to accommodate either set. So that's really who it's for. But it's really for leaders of any stage. And then the larger audience is an employee in any role in any industry. Because it's really about your relationship with employment and the fact that the motivation that leads to top employee performance at any level is a result of somebody's belief that they can get the life they desire from the job they have. That's about your relationship with employment. Also, one of the main things that helps leaders do is stop trying to solve behavioral problems with operational solutions. And so that's a little bit of a teaser about what's in the book, and we can really, you know, dig in together from there.
Well, and let's do that. I mean, the book really, as you say, it focuses on aligning leadership with what people truly want. What inspired that idea?
Well, very typical situation for a first-time leader. I was brought into a global role with a very large mandate and a very short period of time to deliver results and very limited resources. And I had inherited one team member who was there before I joined the company. I was given, you know, headcount to hire two more. And I knew the expectations that were in front of me. I had to generate some big results in a very short period of time. I'm going to have to get my team members to give me what I want, which is quality work on time on a very regular basis in order for me to deliver my team's number to my larger business, which is my responsibility. It's how I keep my job. It's how I get my promotion. So I just sat down and did something I very normally do. I just applied some common sense. And I thought, well, what's the best way to get somebody to give me what I want from them? It's to give them what they want. And so I just asked myself, what do people want from a job? Why do people work? And the answer was so obvious and so quick and clear. People work to get the life they desire in exchange. That is everyone's number one career goal, because nobody truly loves their employer more than they love themselves. And so I thought, well, if I'm going to use somebody's ability to get the life they desire from the job they have as a basis of motivation and also a basis of decisioning about who am I going to hire, I need to figure out, I need to discover the details of what that life is for each person. So as I was interviewing candidates or getting to know the person I'd inherited and learning how to mentor and develop her, I just would say, hey, if you're comfortable, because this is totally voluntary, let's set aside the job for a second. And just, I'd love to learn about the life you're trying to get in exchange for the